Welcome to the OCR Underground Show. Each week, you get the latest research, training secrets of top coaches, and everything you need to crush your next obstacle course race and finish burpee free. Here's your host, SGX coach, Mike Diebler.
Hello and welcome to episode 108 of the OCR Underground Show. I'm your host, Mike Diebler. As always, thank you so much for joining me and making this a part of your OCR training routine. If you want to check out the show notes for any links mentioned in today's show, head on over to ocrunderground.com/episode-108. Well, we are at the end of March right now. As I record this, we're in the middle of March Madness. I don't know about you, but I am pretty obsessed with college basketball. I think there's been a lot of great games. It's been really exciting to watch. I did go to the University of Connecticut, so I'm a huge UConn fan. I'm hoping they can pull it out and go back to Belk and win repeat national champions, which would be pretty awesome. So hopefully you're following along with college basketball, but if not, don't worry. I'm going to focus on helping you train a little bit better for your next OCR. Recently, we held our first DECA event of 2024. We did the DECA Strong at my studio, San Diego Premier Training. And as always, it was an amazing turnout. We had a sold-out event, some awesome performances from those who PR'd to first-timers, to those, you know, trying to get on the global leaderboard to qualify for world championships later this year. So always a great experience. You may have heard of some of the rule changes. So, you know, I wasn't quite sure how those would go. I thought it was pretty smooth. Really not anything drastic, but just good to be aware of some of those rule changes if you plan on doing a DECA event this year. I think the biggest updates have to do with zones 1 and zone 10. Zones 1 with the alternating lunges. Wasn't too much of a rule change other than we just had to have a line down that you need to start in front of that line. Once you pick the weight up, you'll lunge down, touch your knee behind the line, stand all the way back up nice and tall, and bring your foot back in front of that line and just alternate back and forth. So just that little marker that you had to use trying to avoid people, you know, not standing up all the way or doing lunge jumps or, you know, other ways that were just making it very questionable to judge and, you know, trying to get better consistency there. Then when you finished, you can't drop the ram rollers anymore. It's a big safety concern anyway, so probably a good change there that you have to place it down. So if you were to drop it, you can't move on to the next zone until you put it back to where it started. So usually when you drop those things, they go kind of flying around. So it could cost you some time there. So instead of dropping it, you have to place it down back in front of that line. Then you can move on to your next event or next zone. And really the only other significant change was with the burpees, having to reach that full extension overhead. So in the past, if you're familiar with it, you just had to get the roller above your head. So we saw space between the roller and the top of your head. But now we need that full extension. So when we stand up, got to fully extend those arms all the way overhead and then back down. So I know, obviously, when you get to the burpees, you're not looking to do more work, but it did add a little bit there. So I was, you know, curious to see whether there be some personal bests or were people going to be caught up by those, you know, small rule changes there. But we still saw a lot of improvements in time. So even with that time, people seemed to still get it done and make it work. So it didn't seem to affect too many people there. In fact, I had I believe it was a 30-second PR. So I was pretty excited about that. Even, you know, with that rule change, it still didn't seem to, or didn't slow me down. So just wanted to bring those up in case you haven't been able to get out for a DECA event. They do have those new rules in effect for 2024. If you haven't signed up, I would definitely head over to DECA.fit and check out any local events near you. There's events going on all the time, so it's probably pretty easy to find something close to you there. All right, well, as always, I have a great episode for you today. In my research review, I want to talk a little bit about protein, and specifically, I want to talk about, is there an upper limit to protein? So is there a point when, you know, any extra protein you're eating in one sitting is not going towards muscle building, and it's just going to be wasted or converted to something else. So we're going to talk about a little bit of research on the upper limit of protein. In the Inside Mike's Mind segment, I'm going to get into a little bit on mental training. I've talked about that, on previous podcasts a little bit, but I want to talk about a few different strategies to hopefully help you improve on the mental side, a little bit of grit and resiliency there. And then finally, it's been a while since I've done an interview, but I had a great chat with brothers Joel and Luke Hayes from Trio Fitness Training. And they chatted a little bit about their training philosophies and how they help their clients prepare for OCR and hybrid events. And they talk about a really cool project that they've been working on in 2024 that I want to let you guys know about, OCR's greatest. So a really cool thing they're doing. So make sure you listen to that interview to see how you can participate in a pretty cool event that they are putting together. Now, before I get into the episode, I do want to let you know a little bit about our sponsors. I mentioned I am talking about protein in this podcast. And if you need help getting extra protein and amino acids into your diet, you definitely want to check out The Amino Company. They make high quality essential amino acid supplements. I interviewed the founder a while back, Dr. Robert Wolf, and I would definitely recommend listening to that to see how they formulated their amino acids and why they put them together and just the importance of amino acids in general. So a lot of clients I work with do struggle to get enough protein in. And of course, whole food sources are always going to be ideal, but sometimes that's a little bit more challenging. So supplements like The Amino Company is going to make that task incredibly easy for you. They have specific formulations for increasing training performance, muscle repair and recovery, as well as liver function and aging. If you're looking for a nutritional advantage when it comes to boosting peak athletic performance and maximizing training effects, I highly recommend checking out The Amino Company. Right now, you can get 30% off your order when you visit aminoco.com/OCR. And don't forget to use the discount code OCR at checkout. I also wanted to talk about the pod company. And I want to say I'm pretty proud of myself. It's really easy to incorporate ice baths and cold plunges in the summertime, but through the winter months, it can be a little bit more difficult. Even out here in Southern California, where it doesn't get too cold, but at night it does get pretty chilly and it gets a little bit harder to get into that colder water when it's just not 80 degrees outside. But I am proud of myself. I've been pretty consistent, 2 to 3 days a week, hitting those cold plunges. I couldn't be happier with the results. It's just a great way to help boost recovery, improve immunity, and a lot of other mental benefits as well. So the pod company's Ice Pod Pro is super easy to set up. It's portable. You can use it indoor, outdoor, keeps water cold for days, uses UV resistant material for outdoor setup. And the best part, it is super affordable. So if you go to the link in the show notes, I have a special link for you there. When you click on that link and it takes you to their website, you're going to get an offer for $10 off your. So don't forget to visit the show notes to get access to that special link. And then finally, I wanted to let you know about the Dara scale with FitTrack. If you are trying to improve body composition and see how your nutrition and training is helping with that goal, you want a scale that's going to help you monitor specific metrics to make sure that you are losing or gaining in the right places. So the Dara scale is easy to use, comprehensive, accurate, and gives you 17 health metrics to monitor, including body fat, BMR, metabolic age, body water percentage, bone mass, and much more. Super easy to understand and explains what each metric means for you and helps you make better decisions to see specific improvements. The app comes with it, features progress reports, health scores, nutrition logs, and even exercise videos that you can follow. FitTrack helps you get a comprehensive picture of your body, which helps you make smarter choices that have to help you get significant impact on body composition and performance goals. So right now you can get 50% off on their website, and really cool, you can get an extra 20% off that when you use my code OCR Underground. So if you visit getfittrack.com and then use that code OCR Underground, you can save pretty big on the Dara scale. All right, well, let's get into today's episode. All right, in today's Inside Mike's Mind segment, we're going to go into a little bit of some strategies for your mental training and a couple things that really sparked this. One, I am putting the finishing touches on a new program that I'm super excited about. It took me well over a year to put this together, but I'm working on a certification for coaches to help them train clients preparing for obstacle course racing. Super excited about this. And actually, the last module that I went through, so it's kind of freshest on my mind, is some mental training strategies that are shown to be helpful working with clients. So this should be coming out pretty soon. I have some videos that I have to shoot to finish it up. But if you want to get on the wait list and get the special promo pricing and other bonuses when I do launch the program, I have a special link in the show notes for this episode. So just make sure you head on over to the show notes so you can join the wait list to get first access when I do open it. I'm going to limit it to, I'm not sure the number yet, but I want to really help those that first get started with it. So I don't want to start with too many people. I want to make sure that all goes smoothly and get feedback. So if you want to be one of the first to go through this new certification program, just make sure you head on over to that show notes website. Now, the other thing that I was kind of motivated to do this segment. I recently had a client pass away, which is obviously always a really hard thing to deal with. And this client really was one of the main reasons to help me get started with my studio. So I really owed him a lot and was really grateful for all the help that he gave me. And obviously this is a sad time when anybody passes, but I do the best I can to try and remember all the good things, the good relationships, the good memories, everything we can, so his memory will live on. And I like to share a story. He was a big time runner, and would before I really knew him, he was owning owned a facility that I was actually working out at the time. And he challenged all the trainers because he knew none of us were runners, that if we could beat him in a race, there was a 5K turkey trot coming up, and if anyone could beat him, he'd pay $1,000. So everyone kind of jumped on it, and I actually think I was lifting when he made this announcement. I kind of threw the weights down and went outside and started running because it was something that I didn't really do a whole lot at the time. So what I did to prepare for this was I looked up his time from the previous year. And he ran a 21:05 or 22:05. Sorry, he ran a 22:05, I believe, something like that, whatever the number was. So I saw what he ran, and I focused all of my training on that number. So I would make sure I knew exactly what pace I needed to run at to hit that time, and my workouts were kind of all geared towards that number. So when race day came, I went out there and I ran 22:05, that exact number that I was shooting for. And unfortunately, he ran 21 something and ended up beating me by like 40 seconds. But I should have looked at what his best was and not just what his previous race was in that particular 5K. But I bring this up because is that just a coincidence that I ran this exact time? Or was there something more to it? And I really think that this is kind of that blending of mental and physical. And I think it really starts with the mental side of it. When we can really have clear goals and a clear vision, it makes training so much easier. And I think that's kind of the power of mental training. And I want to at least use this segment to give you a few helpful ideas, a few things that I talk about in my course that will hopefully help people just become more resilient and perform better. Because why not take advantage of everything that you can that is going to help you? And I think there's pretty clear evidence that practicing mental training strategies helps physical performance. So if it'll help you, why wouldn't you do it? Only makes sense. Now you might not know where to start, and hopefully this episode will give you some clear guidance there. Now, I think mental training will help in a few different scenarios, and kind of the big three situations that I think you might benefit the most with some of these strategies would include lack of motivation, right? If you're not motivated, it's much less likely that you're going to go out there and push through. Poor self-identity, where you just don't believe that you're going to be successful, or kind of a fear of getting uncomfortable. And I think if we really focus on those three things, a lot of the mental roadblocks we run into kind of hit one of those categories. Now, depending on which one it seems to be your biggest issue, you might focus on particular strategies. So I just wanted to at least give you one or two things you can think about that will help in each of those situations. So if I start with this lack of motivation, I think this is where a lot of people run into problems. And especially if you've been doing this for a long time, you've been training for a long time, you've been racing for a long time, you kind of just get to a point sometimes where you're just going through the motion, and it's okay, but you really have a hard time pushing through and seeing, the next step, the next level. And I think this is kind of the story that I brought up. And it's having the best thing that you can do is really having a clear goal, right? A clear mission. If you know exactly what you're trying to accomplish, I think it's way easier to get motivated, right? It's motivation's a hard thing. It comes and goes. We can, seem to rely on it sometimes, and other times it's just not there. So we don't want to always rely on motivation, but if you feel like it's really holding you back, you might need something like this to help you out. And I know this might sound obvious, but again, there is clear evidence showing that having a specific goal versus a non-specific goal is much more beneficial, and it's a great way to get you motivated. If you are looking to improve numbers or something specific, a specific skill or performance or whatever it might be, having a number or a goal like that versus just trying harder, right? When they just tell people to try harder, do better, that's not a great motivator because you really have no direction to push your energy, right? But if I have a clear goal, I was trying to hit a very specific number, and all my focus was on that number. So it made my training really crystal clear. And I was getting excited about it because I could see I was getting really close to this number. And everything I was doing was showing those improvements there. And I think that's a great motivation when you're doing better. And how do you know you're doing better is when you have these clear goals, you know exactly what you're working on, and all of your energy can kind of shift to that focus. So if you feel like you're not motivated to work out or, to race hard or whatever it might be, I think taking a step back and really coming up with clear, specific goals, and the more specific you have, the better, right? I had a very specific time I was reaching for. It made my training just that much easier. So think about how can you have a crystal clear goal to help motivate you and really push you when things get hard. Obviously the money started the motivation, but I think it was more than that to really help me push through and reach the goal that I was reaching for or shooting for. Now, the second thing is self-identity, poor self-identity. It's, if you whether you think you can or think you can't, you're right, right? So it's the self-fulfilling prophecy of telling yourself that you can't do something or you're not good at something. And I'm guilty of this. I think we're all guilty of this. How many times on this podcast I've said I'm not a runner and things like that. And why that might seem insignificant, I think after a while you identify as that person you keep telling yourself. So if I keep saying I'm not a runner, how am I ever going to get better at running? Right. So I think it all starts with the words and the conversations that we have with ourself. And positive self-talk is such a simple tool you can use. It may be hard to implement, but it's an easy thing. The first step is just realizing when you are talking to yourself negatively. When you start saying, I'm not good at something, when you think of yourself as a fixed person, a fixed mindset, right? Where you're just not good. That's obviously not true. Now, you might struggle with something. You may not be where you want to be right now. But if I tell myself, I, have bad balance, I can't run long distances, you can't jump, or whatever, attribute you're looking to improve. If you just tell yourself you're not good at it, then you're telling yourself that you will never be good at it. We want an open mind where we can really focus on that we can change, right? And that's the whole point of training. We train things so we get better at them, but we have to start inside our head first with some of these just more positive self-talk. And when I'm aware of it, that I'm saying these things, now can I turn it around to something that will help me, right? Can I turn it into, okay, I struggle with this right now, but if I work on these things, I will become a better runner, and I really have to work on this. So it almost leads right into our first topic of specific goal setting, right? So if I have that specific goal and I can relate this back to that specific thing, I know the things that I have to tell myself. And again, there's lots of research, just talking to yourself in a more positive manner and doing nothing else can boost performance. It'll make you push harder. You're less likely to fatigue as fast. You're willing to get uncomfortable, which, is the next thing we're going to talk about. So they all kind of help each other out. So I think that's really the next thing, is focus on how can you talk to yourself in a more positive manner. So catch yourself when you're saying some of these negative things. And the final thing I wanted to talk about is maybe the hardest one. I know this for me, probably the hardest thing is getting uncomfortable, right? So if we really want to do well, or if we're trying something new, a different race, a distance, whatever it might be, you're gonna have to get uncomfortable. And it's hard, right? I don't think anybody necessarily enjoys getting uncomfortable. They just are more willing to do it than others. And that's really what we have to take on, is that this is really something that you have to deal with. And there are quite a few different things and strategies that we can implement to help with this. One that might be helpful, again, it's almost going to go back to our last point, is really just reframing it. It's a mind shift where we are going to focus on these things that are really uncomfortable. We have to tell ourselves, well, why are we doing them in the first place? We are doing them because this is a part of our training, maybe, that we tend to be weak. And by getting really uncomfortable, it's getting my weakest link even stronger, right? So again, just reframing, hey, this is going to be really tough, but it's necessary for me to hit my very specific goal that I set, and I'm going to have positive self-talk while I do it to help me get through it, right? So we can see how all of these different things are going to help aid each other for me to get a little bit uncomfortable, because I'm willing to go there because I know I have a goal and I know this step is going to help in that process. And I think, part of this as well is just acknowledging that it is going to be tough, right? You might hear people say, embrace the suck and things like that. And I think that is important. Don't lie to yourself that I hope this isn't going to be bad, or it's not going to be as bad as last time. It's just deal with it, right? It's going to be tough. It's going to be challenging. But remember why we're doing this in the first place, right? Prepare for the discomfort that you're going to go through, right? If it's not uncomfortable, you're probably doing something wrong, right? You're not pushing yourself to the point where we really need to push to see the benefits there. So I hope all that makes sense. But I think these simple strategies, based on the type of mental roadblocks you're running into, can really be helpful to help you break through plateaus and really see an extra increase in your performance. All right, let's get into our research review, and we're going to talk all about protein. And specifically, I want to talk about, is there an upper limit? Now, probably you may have heard things like, 30 grams is the most amount of protein you can take in one sitting. The rest is going to be oxidized or converted into something else or turned to fat, whatever it might be. But that there is this upper limit, and once you eat that much protein, you can't do anything else with it. Now, this idea has been around for a while, and it always kind of bothered me that there would be a specific number like 30 grams. But it seemed like everywhere you look, people were saying 30 grams. And I'd always think, well, what if you weigh 100 pounds, and what if you weigh 300 pounds? Is it still 30 grams? That really doesn't make sense. So something like that, when you hear an overgeneralization, just realize that there's probably not, it's not completely true, or maybe only partly true. So I wanted to talk about a couple studies, but this first one from Cell Reports Medicine, this was back in December 2023. And what they did in this study, they compared three groups. So they had individuals work out, and they actually did a very, very intense workout. And they compared three different experimental designs with this. So they had, after the lifting, they would consume either 25 grams of protein, 100 grams of protein, or they were given a placebo with no protein. And they actually used something called a stable isotope amino acid infusion, where they can actually see where those amino acids ended up in the body, which is kind of cool. So they can see, well, was this used for muscle? Was it used for something else? Energy, whatever it might have been. So they did the workout. Then they studied them for the following 12 hours. And what they found was there actually did not seem to be a limit in protein intake. So if you think about that, 100 grams of protein, that is pretty significant to take in that much protein. Even 25 grams is a decent amount. I think that's what most people would think would be kind of that higher end protein intake. So that's four times that amount. And what they found was that when they took in higher amounts of protein, it seemed to just extend digestion and absorption time of that protein. So, which kind of makes sense, right? They were able to intake 25 grams a lot quicker than they were 100 grams. So it just took longer to get all of that in them. But it wasn't all extra, after 30 grams, it was just oxidized or, converted to fat or anything like that. They saw, the more protein you ate, the higher this protein synthesis would occur. So pretty interesting there. What they found with that, so with the 100 gram, they had the highest amount of muscle protein synthesis, and actually found that only 15% of it was oxidized. So some was, but not as much as you would think. And they found of the 100 grams, 13 grams were incorporated into skeletal muscle. So remember, when you eat protein, it's going to be used for a variety of things, not just for muscle. So out of 100 grams, only 13 grams actually made it into the muscle. So we can see that you actually need a decent amount of protein to consume to just get that, that amount of protein into the actual muscle tissue. So a couple things that I want to really look at, or at least discuss with this study, is that saying that you can just eat as much protein as you want. Of course not. But it's just saying maybe there's not this clear answer, or only one way to consume your protein, right? So for a long time, and a lot of people would say you have to eat protein multiple times a day. Now I'm not saying is that better than consuming once a day, but at least we know if you did consume one very large amount of protein in one sitting, it seems like a lot of that protein will be put to good use. Now, the big caveat with all of this is in this study, they did a very intense workout. So it makes sense that your need for protein would increase dramatically based on that simple fact. You did a hard workout. And I think this is why I recommend the nutrition advice I do of really matching your macronutrient and caloric intake based on your daily activity levels. We can't say you need to consume, 150 grams of protein per day, or this many calories per day, because they might fluctuate a little bit. If you had a really, really hard workout, we might want to increase your protein a little bit because, hey, we need that protein to be involved in the healing process. So the protein needs have increased. So we should reflect that. Now, do I need 100 grams of protein in one sitting if I'm going to sit and do absolutely nothing that day? Probably not, right? Maybe more of that is going to be oxidized because it's not needed in the muscle. There isn't as much muscle repair that's needed to take place. So that's really the important thing is, while there may not be this clear upper limit of how much protein you can consume in one sitting, our bodies are dynamic and always changing. So I can't say it's true every single day in every single situation. So just keep in mind, protein, just like our other macronutrients, should reflect the demands needed within the body. So if I am working out, I'm pretty active, then those protein needs probably go up, and I can probably get away with consuming more in one sitting. Now, this doesn't mean that consuming protein multiple times a day is bad either. That still might be the better method because to consume 100 grams in one sitting may not be possible. You may not want to do something like that. But this idea is just telling us that maybe we don't have to restrict it if we can get a little bit higher in one meal and a little bit lower in the other, we might be okay with doing something like that. Another study, just quickly, I wanted to talk about looked specifically in older subjects. So it was an older population, and they compared 0, 15, 30, or 45 grams. And they basically saw the same thing that as those protein, as the protein intake increased, we saw higher rates of protein synthesis. And really, specifically with 30 and 45 grams, 0 and 15, we didn't see much change. And one thing you've probably heard, or definitely will hear if you haven't heard it, as you get older, you do not utilize and do not have that same anabolic response to protein intake. So your requirements tend to go up as you get older. So you need to consume more. And that's why we see at 15 grams, we're not seeing a huge boost in protein synthesis, but 30 grams, we're seeing a very significant. So hitting some of those higher numbers like 30, 45 grams might be ideal. Now, we don't want to be looking at just protein because, like I said, with the workout, this is a we need to look at the big picture. So always keep that in mind. Number one, what's the stimulus, right? Is there a stimulus, right? We need protein just to live, but if we are exercising and very active, that protein need goes up, right? So if you are not active, your protein needs are not that high. If you are active, like if you're listening to this podcast, I am assuming you're a pretty active person. So your protein needs are probably much higher than the average person. So we need a stimulus. So did you work out that day? What kind of workout did you do? If I'm trying to build muscle and increase protein synthesis, we need some excess calories, right? If you are in a caloric deficit and you're dieting and trying to lose weight, that's why it's so hard to build muscle because you're just not consuming enough calories so that this protein can go to the muscle. Remember, it's get needed for other things as well. And we need calories in general, right? Because I don't want to just use my protein, my amino acids for as a fuel source because I'm not getting enough carbohydrates or fat in my diet. So I need appropriate calories from with that stimulus. And specifically with muscle protein synthesis, we need adequate levels of leucine. Leucine's kind of the gatekeeper, right? It needs to switch protein synthesis on. So it's not just protein. We need to make sure there's adequate amounts of leucine, one of our branched chain amino acids, that we have a high enough amount of intake of leucine, and then we have our complete proteins to help build the muscle protein or whatever protein that we're trying to build. So this is a complicated topic, but hopefully you can see that it's not as clear cut as maybe we thought. We probably can get away with higher amounts. But again, what's the total picture, right? What else is going on within the body? So look at your lifestyle. Does one way just make more sense and you seem to have success with it? Then you're probably doing the right thing. But maybe you need to change it. You were doing it specifically because you thought I can only eat this much protein and everything else is going to be converted to fat. That might not be true, depending on the situation. So hopefully this gives you a better picture of protein, how much you should be eating, or whether you need to be breaking up throughout the day, or consuming large amounts in one sitting. All right, everyone. Today I have a couple of great guests for you on our interview for today's episode. Today I have on brothers Joel and Luke Hayes. They're personal trainers specializing in obstacle course racing and hybrid competitions, as well as tactical competitions with their company Trio Fitness Training. They've been racing in OCR competitively since 2017, and since the more recent growth of hybrid events, they've competed in a dozen events and coached athletes to the DECA World Championships, as well as other hybrid competition. Their specialty is tailoring training specifically to individual athletes. So the athlete is put in the best possible position to progress and succeed. So, Joel, Luke, thanks so much for joining me on today's episode.
Thanks for having
Absolutely.
us.
Appreciate you having us.
Yeah, this is going to be a good one. A lot of great topics I want to get to. But first, I would just love for you guys to kind of let our listeners know a little bit how you got into OCR hybrid events. If Joel, let's start with you first on just kind of how you got into this sport.
Sure. So
I back in 2015, I can't remember if I was still in college or just got out of college. But anyway, Luke, I think brought it up. So we have a bunch of brothers. Another one of them, he is also a personal trainer. So at the same time, we all lived in the DC area and all worked at separate Gold's Gyms. So we had like a monopoly going there for a while. But I think Luke brought it up and said, hey, we should do a Spartan race because he had done a warrior dash or something prior. So we all signed up and did the Spartan Sprint in DC. It was in Maryland, but they called it the DC Sprint, I believe. And then we're like, well, we did one. We got to go for the trifecta now. Ended up doing the trifecta. And then the next year, we ran a few more along with the Savage. And then I think at that Savage race, I know it was for me, I can't remember for Luke, but in the overall placement, I think we were in the teens or close to 10, somewhere in there for overall. And both of us were kind of like, man, I think if we trained specifically for this, we could do pretty well. So at least for me, that was like the race that decided that I really wanted to like try and be competitive at it. Yeah, so that's how it kind of
Awesome.
all got going.
Cool, Luke. So it sounds like you kind of got into it a little bit earlier.
Yeah, so I did, excuse me, my voice, but I did start with a warrior dash, but that was just for fun with some work friends, and that was a mud run. I mean, we left there literally covered in mud head to toe, not, and it was just for fun. I don't know if there was a competitive heat or not, but and then after that, I ended up doing the Spartan Wintergreen Super, which that was in 2014, and I had no clue what I was getting into because I didn't run at all. At that time, I only did basically like bodybuilding, just strength training workouts a couple times a week, like three or four, and no cardio. I intentionally avoided it because I didn't want to lose my gains, which obviously that's not true, but that's just the mentality I had at the time, and it's not right. But anyway, so yeah, I did the Wintergreen Super, and I mean, it was absolutely crazy. At one point, there was a 1 mile just like uphill vertical on a double black diamond hill, and like my legs were just roasted, and the obstacles were a lot different than and a lot harder, that's for sure. And like there was a log carry, and that was up one of the hills. People were dropping those and they were going flying down. Everybody would just be like, log. And then you'd have to like jump out of the way, but it would fly down and a couple cars got hit at the bottom, which is just crazy. But yeah, so that was cool. That was just for fun. And then when I realized that I wanted to compete in OCR was, I don't remember what race it was, but Faye Stenning came flying past us. And when she came
I know what
by,
race that was.
when she came by, she was breathing like so heavy. It sounded like she was about to die, but she just kept going and like just flew past us up this hill. And I'm like barely able to walk up this thing without stopping. And it was just like, that is so cool. And I think after that, I was like, you know what? I want to try and like be able to push myself that hard. That'd be cool.
That's funny you say that. I'm pretty sure it was Faye. One of the first competitive heats I did with Spartan. I was near the finish line. I would say less than a half a mile, and I can see her coming. And I'm like, I can't let her beat me. She started what, 15 minutes after me, and she just smoked me. It just and it looked like she was barely trying as she just I was walking probably at that point. But that's funny. Yeah. So it's funny how you get motivated there. It's pretty cool to see you brought up like the logs and how the obstacles have they've stayed the same, but they've changed a little bit. I saw somebody post on Facebook or somewhere, like, remember when the rope climbs used to be in water? And I'm like, that's right. Like, you had to come out of the mud. And I think, it was cool to have those crazy obstacles, but at the same time, they're probably like, we can't keep doing this. We can't. People are going to throw logs, they're going to fall. And that's exactly what happened. So it's crazy the change it's made over the years.
For sure.
How many brothers do you guys have?
So there's five of us.
All right. Are
Five
you guys
boys.
pretty competitive?
Fairly. It depends on the thing, but yeah, fairly.
Okay, so do all of them race?
Oh
No,
no. There's
okay.
just us
So
three
the
that do this type of
the bottom
competition.
three of us are trainers, and then the oldest two haven't, I don't think they've ever done any races or anything. And then the other brother who did the first several races with us, I don't think he's done one for a while. He still like says he'd like to do more, but I just think
Okay.
he does, hasn't had the
A bunch
time
of
or hasn't had people to
slackers.
deal with.
Yeah,
They're a bunch of
yeah.
slackers.
Yes. So tell me a little bit about Trio Fitness Training. So this is you guys both work with this company, is that correct?
Luke, do you want to take it or me?
You can, it's fine.
So it's our company. We started it years ago. I don't even remember what year. Maybe
2015,
2017. Oh,
15.
15. Okay. Yeah, so initially it started out, we just like wanted to have an online place where we could train people, and it didn't start out specifically for obstacle course racing, but then once we got into it, we were like, hey, this is what we're passionate about now. This is what we would like to help people with, because initially we were in the open heats, and even later on, we were at races for hours and hours and hours on the weekend. So we would see the obstacles that people were having problems with. So then we started tailoring Trio specifically to obstacle course racing. And it was geared pretty much only to that for several years. And then when hybrid came around, Luke started doing more hybrid events, and I couldn't for a while, when the pandemic happened and everything. And then once I could make it to some events, I tried a DECA, had a lot of fun, tried more, started doing some more of them. And so we were like, you know what? We should just branch it out into hybrid obstacle course racing. And then I like doing tactical competitions, and the training is actually very similar to hybrid training. So we also do some coaching for that as well. But the whole point of what we do is like specific customized training online for athletes, because like over the years, I've looked around for companies or people who do very specialized training where they actually gear it towards the athlete. And I haven't really found or seen anyone who does it very well online. I've seen a lot of companies who build stock programs and then just change a few things here and there. And they'll schedule these things out for weeks and weeks on end and just give them to a person and be like, all right, do that, without necessarily following up and figuring out if the person can even do the first week of that, much less the next week, the next week, the next week, and so on. So we pretty much program week by week. Like we have a macro version or a macro vision of what their training looks like, but almost every week someone will like reply to me about the training that I put up and be like, well, I struggled with this thing this week. I wasn't able to quite do what you listed, or the weight, or the reps, or whatever. So the next week I can go in and change that up so that they are able to do it. And it's still challenging, but it's not just like, oh, I can't do it, this is pointless. So we really tailor literally every aspect of the training to the person, whether it's the exercise, the equipment. Like we have people fill out a very detailed survey when they sign up that talks about their training background, what equipment they have access to, where, what type of terrain as far as like hills, roads, trails, whatever they have access to, what their goals are. And we gear everything towards what they have and what their goals are. So I think as far as I know, we're the only online business who literally tailors everything towards that. And I think that's extremely important, because then people are able to progress at a very specific level that matches what they're capable of, and then they're able to best achieve results that way.
Awesome. Do you guys see some common maybe mistakes or misconceptions that people have coming into training for a race? Maybe specifically if it's their first time training for one of these races, any specific things that you just kind of see a theme of, yeah, a lot of people just tend to fall into these traps or whatever it might be.
I think one of the most common things I see, especially in like DECA and hybrid, well, I mean, it applies to OCR just as much, but a lot of people will go on like Instagram and they'll see what some of the pros are doing in their heats, like going through an obstacle super smooth or doing the sled in high rocks at like a really good pace, and they'll think that's what they're supposed to be able to do, and then they'll go ahead and try that and they'll burn out like immediately and then be crashed for the rest of the race. So that's what I see most of, especially with DECA. Same thing, like you watch somebody go on the rower and they're going like all out, and it's like, hold on, that's the second zone. You've still got eight more to go. So
Absolutely. I think those are the people you can spot right away when they're hitting zones 1, 2, 3, and it's like, oof, they're either a freak and they're going to just crush a time, or more likely, we're going to see a di different picture in about 5 minutes. And I think that's with the hybrid events, people have a hard time figuring out.
I think that's true in obstacle course racing too, because that was one of the biggest lessons I had to learn, and that's one of the lessons I have to teach almost every person that we've trained for obstacle racing who wants to do it fast, is pacing. Because most people come out and they're super excited, the start line, the DJ's trying to hype you up, which is awesome, but then you kind of get too hyped up and you go out really fast, and within mile one you're burned out, you already gassed yourself out, and so you suffer through the rest of the race. Whereas if you had paced yourself properly according to whatever fitness level you'd built up, you could be much more consistent, much more effective through the whole course of the race, and much faster going through it. So I think that's probably the biggest thing for people who want to be competitive. And then for athletes who are more just going out to do it, challenge themselves and have fun, I think a lot of the upper body obstacles are where people fail. And I think they just don't know exactly how to train for those things to improve their upper body strength, their grip strength, and their technique on obstacles. So that would be for the general populace who's just trying to go out, have a good time, I think that's probably the biggest thing where they struggle.
Absolutely. Going back to, I liked your what you guys were saying with pacing and figuring it. Like one, I think a trap a lot of people fall into is they go on social media and they see whether it's the actual event or they see the training some of those people do, and know unless you're at that level, like you're probably not following a workout like that, like understanding how to scale it a little bit. But that idea of pacing. Do you think there's any specific strategies somebody can follow to help them figure that out? Or do you think it's more an experience thing? Like you kind of learn things like that. I don't know if you have any insight to help people maybe find a good, I don't want to go too slow, but yeah, I can't go too fast either.
So for myself and what I do with a lot of my clients, you can use a heart rate monitor. But a lot of times what I also focus on is just like how you feel and RPE, basically scale of 1 to 10 of intensity. And so for something like a DECA strong, you're going to be at like a really high intensity, but not, you're just not crossing that line. You're like right at the edge of the line to where you can barely hang on, but you can hang on. And then if you cross that line, then you're going to have to slow down or burn out or whatever. So that's practicing that and intentionally having that in workouts and having them practice that intensity and being able to move consistently, like through a circuit or something, right? So you don't have any given rest. You just go from one thing right into the other, right into the other, just like a hybrid event. And keeping the same level of intensity the whole time. And really, it does take just a lot of practice and kind of getting used to it.
Yeah, that's something that for all the hybrid athletes, especially once doing DECA, the other week, one of our obstacle course racing athletes this year decided she wanted to try some hybrids. So she wanted to try a DECA strong, and she did her first one. And we talked about pacing a ton leading up to it. And in her training, I was talking to her about like, all right, so these first few zones, if you go hard in them, you will blow up. It's just a guarantee. So if you outpace your fitness level, you're gonna blow up. And she practiced it in training a lot, but it's still not the same as when you go out there on race day. Like I said, even with OCR, the energy's high. Maybe you're nervous going into it because you want to do well. And so after her first race, she's like, yeah, I think I went a little too hard in the first few zones because coming into like four, five, six, I was already feeling a little bit gassed. I was like, well, yeah, there's the pacing, but you can train for it. But I think having some in race experience goes a long way as well. So you can going into your first one, you can have the idea, you can know roughly where those numbers are, but until you've done the full 10 in a row in the race environment, you probably don't know exactly how it is.
No, I think those are all great tips. I know, I always try and like, obviously you know, heart rate's great. I love, you know, I am kind of a numbers guy and I like seeing numbers. It just helps me know, oh, I'm hitting 95%. I'm kind of screwed right now, or no, I'm right where I need to be. But you know, sometimes you're not checking your heart rate the whole time and I don't have an easy way to see it. Sometimes using the equipment, right? Like, okay, I'm on the rower. The more I do the rower, the more I know my pacing. You know, if I'm at like a 140 pace, I'm in trouble, right? There's no way I can maintain this, more than, you know, 30 seconds or so. But I think experience too, right? Is the more you start to know those numbers. So I try and tell clients, at least like assault bike, rower, skier, the ones you see those numbers, like just know, even in training, right? We'll have people doing, you know, maybe half mile sprints or mile sprints on the assault bike, and they go all out right in the first 10 seconds. And it's like slow, slow, slow. You're gonna thank me later. You just can't keep this up. And I just think, but like you said, race day comes and it's really hard because your people are yelling at you, like you're pumped, you want to do well. And I think it's hard to manage both those, like paying attention to numbers, how you feel, the adrenaline. But those are all, I think it's just practice, right? The more you do it, the better you get at it.
It is definitely a huge part mental too, because when you're like in a deck of strong, when you're on the rower, you should be pretty comfortable for the most part. And like for most people, it feels too comfortable. And then you're sitting there doing it and you're like, I need to be going faster because this is a race and I'm trying to get the fastest time I can. And here I am just like feeling like I can go faster, but I'm not supposed to. So in your mind, it just kind of messes with you a little bit.
It takes self-discipline to know what your numbers are from your training. And then when you get to the actual event, to stick to those numbers, even if you feel like you could do more, because doing the more is probably where you burn out.
And I think a lot of people need to hear that, kind of like trust the process, right? Trust yourself that you're doing. You put the work in that. As soon as you get off your game plan, now you're relying on grit and, you know, whatever you got down there, and that's just not a good, unless you're on like the last zone or station or the last little sprint, that's fine, but any other place you're in trouble for sure. So I think, you know, kind of on this topic, do you guys get a lot of individuals training for both a hybrid event and an OCR and kind of switching back and forth? Is that something you see a lot nowadays?
So we have a handful that do that. Sometimes it's funny because sometimes they'll sign up for training for obstacle course racing, and then after a while, they'll see some of our posts from hybrid events and be like, "Oh, that looks interesting. I want to try one of those. Can we do that?" And, yeah, sure, can. Yeah, absolutely. So there's a handful. It's not the majority. So like Luke focuses most on the DECA stuff because that's what he's most passionate about. I really like hybrid, but I also really love running longer distances. So I tend to take more of the obstacle course racing athletes, especially if it's like a longer event, like an ultra. But yeah, we get crossover and I'm probably losing my thought right here.
Just
There's some
to go off of that,
crossover.
do you any specific, whether they're strategies, tips for people? Because I think the more and more popular hybrid is getting, you get people bouncing back and forth. And obviously there are similarities with the two, but it's different, right? If you're training for a half marathon OCR versus a DECA Strong, right? There's components that will cross over, but that's a different style of training. So I just like to get other coaches' input on this. Any thoughts on like, okay, I have a client or I have somebody that wants to do these two extremes. Any recommendations on how I balance that? Or do you kind of go all in on one and the other one's just for fun? Or, you know, any thoughts on that?
So I do have a specific client who's literally doing that, and it's actually really fun coaching him. So he's working on improving his Deca Strong, and he's also trying to do the Killington Super this summer, and he did the same thing last year too. So that is quite a different extreme there. And it is tough to find the balance, but I think it's just really just dialing into like a slow progression over time, because if you go too intense on either one, then it's going to negatively affect the other one. So, I mean, that's just a talk you have to have with the client, though. Is it which one do you prioritize, or do you want care equally about them both? And then from there, you can adjust. So right now, he wants to do well at both, which is cool and that's fun, but it is a fine balance. And again, you really like just have to keep the intensity a little bit more moderate overall. You can still push some good efforts, but if you go too hard, then like if you do a really hard deck workout, you're not going to be able to do your long run. You know what I mean? Or vice versa. So you just have to balance it out a little bit more. And it will take a little bit longer, but I mean, it's cool to be working towards those two goals. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, I think what's cool about kind of how the obstacle course racing athletes have started morphing into hybrid athletes is they get good at a lot of things. And for people who want to do multiple, I tell them like, if you don't have one that you want to do more than the other, and we're generalizing here, then just know that when you generalize that much, you're not going to be the best you could be at either one. You can still get very, very good at both. It'll take longer because you're doing two different types of training and you're not specializing, but you can get great at both. So yeah, like Luke said, it comes down to talking with the athlete and just being honest and saying, hey, you know, if you want to do a Killington race and also be at DECA World Championship, like this is going to be a process and it's going to be hard because you're doing two different styles of training, two things that require different methods of training. One's a lot of running and the other's, if you're doing a strong, there's no running. So yeah, just being honest with the athletes. And then I don't think I've ever told an athlete no as far as like I want to do this thing. I don't think I've ever said nah, that's not gonna work. I'm more like, okay, but here are the expectations for that thing, just so you know, so you're not like expecting to be on the podium of an ultra and also on the podium of a DECA in the same year. It can happen, but less likely if you're not already good at both of those things. So.
Those are all great points, and I think that's the important thing is realizing, yeah, if you train generally, you get generally good at things. When some people, if that's all they care about, they just want to do a lot of races, have fun. I'm not going to win anything, and I just want to go out there and not hurt myself. Like 100%, you can do those things. But if you get to the point where you're like, maybe I do want to get a little bit serious about this, picking a side, again, you don't have to give up anything, but you're just saying, I need to go a little bit more all in on this one. And Luke, I like that you brought up the idea of it's probably going to take longer, right?
For
It's
sure.
not like I have 8 weeks I can commit to this one thing. It's like, well, I have these very varying goals. This might be a 6 month process of getting really good, like allowing my body to adapt to all these different things. So I think that's just something people need to hear. It's like, cool, you can definitely do these things unless you're an outlier. You probably want to specialize at some point if that's what your priority is.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, you guys are working on a really cool project that I wanted to make sure we talk about. So the OCR's greatest project. I don't know who wants to take the lead on this, but tell us a little bit more about what you guys have going on.
Yeah, so OCR's Greatest is a competition that we came up with basically to help grow the foundation of OCR, which is the small and local OCR brand. So everybody knows Spartan Race, everybody knows Tough Mudder, everybody knows Savage, but there are over 100 small OCR brands in the US that are putting on really good events of all different levels. Some of them are like super easy kind of mud runs, others are like really intense and have fire and machine guns and stuff like that. And it's like, so those brands, they don't get enough attention. Like anybody who knows about OCR probably found out about through Spartan or Tough Mudder or whatever. And that's like for me, from the competitive aspect, that's all I knew and that's all I paid attention to because I didn't think anything about these local OCRs because like they're not, I don't know, it wasn't like a big competition thing. All I focus on was competition. But and there are a lot of competitive ones too. Some of them have prize money. And they also have like really awesome obstacles and stuff like that. So I wish if I could go back when I was spending all this time on OCR, I wish I had spent more time with some of the local ones. It was just like, it was just where my mind was at. You know what I mean? Was just focused on competition. But what we're trying to do is like really help from a community aspect. So OCR's Greatest is a competition where if you complete any of the races on like any local OCR race in the US, you then email us that race result and you get 10 points. Okay, so that's how the competition works. It's that easy. You just participate in the race. The incentive is for as many athletes as possible to participate in these local OCRs. And the more local OCRs that you do, you climb the leaderboard. And then at the end of the year, we have a prize pool for the top athlete. And that's just one athlete because it's not male or female. It's just one overall, whoever does the most OCRs. And the prize pool is made up of local OCR entries for 2025. And they've all donated that because they see how this is like a cool way for the local OCR community to get together. Especially just like, I'm not trying to bash Spartan because I do like them a lot, but every time they make a change, like the paying for pictures or removing burpees or whatever, people always complain about it, which I get. You know, you have a right to complain, but it's like, if you don't like it, what are you going to do about it? Either you stop OCR or you find other OCRs to do. And it doesn't seem like people know about all these other events that exist out there. So we're just trying to bring more awareness to them, basically, in a fun community type of way.
That's awesome. So, this will only count towards those local events. So if they do a Spartan Tough Mudder, any of the bigger ones, no points there, only smaller
That's
events.
right. Yeah. So we have a rule book on our page that explains, I think it's three races maximum that they hold in a calendar year. That's our limit. So if a brand holds more than three races, then they're not counted as a local OCR.
Okay.
Don't quote him on that, but yeah, I'm pretty sure. I
I could
think
be
he's
wrong.
right on that, but the rule book is on the on the page for it. And yeah, so the definition of what we're defining as a small race is on there. Yeah, something like Spartan or Savage doesn't qualify.
Okay, perfect. I'll make sure we put everything, the website on the show notes for this episode so people can check that out.
Awesome.
Now I lost my train of thought. I want to ask you
Sorry.
guys on this. So let's say, like, how are you guys listing all of the races you know about on the website, or is this something, hey, I found a local race and I'm going to just give you the race results? Both.
So every year for the past 3 or 4 years now, I've been writing an article on our blog called The Big List of Small OCRs. It's just in the USA. I don't really have time to do it for the whole world. And the USA is enough research time. So on that list this year was about 100 races. So anything from that list is good. That's on our blog. I believe I have that linked on the page as well. And then on the bottom of OCR's Greatest page, I put together a map and one by one added them to the map. So there were only a few where I couldn't add them for some reason, some glitch or something, but there's like 90 plus of them listed on that little map on there too. So then you get at least a visual, you know, if I live in Texas, here's what's roughly around me. But yeah, so there's over 90 on that map, 100 roughly on the article we put out. So there's a lot for people to choose from.
Awesome. And if let's say a local company's listening and they want to be added to it, they can reach out to you, I'm assuming, and
Yep. Yeah, that
put it
actually
on
just
there.
happened this last week. Someone commented on the article in a Facebook group where we put it and said, "Hey, can we get added to this list?" And I was like, "Sure, what's your event?" And they put the link on there and I got it added. So, yeah.
Okay,
If
awesome.
they qualify, then yeah, we'll put them on there. Happy to do it.
All
Yeah,
right.
that goes for any participants as well. If you participate in a race or found one you're going to participate in, you can, if it's the small local OCR in the US and follows those guidelines we have in the rule book, then you can just email us the results link just like we have for every other race, and it will be counted for it. So, because we're not going to find every single one that there is out there. And also, because we're already in March, almost April now, any races that qualify that have already happened and people have done those, they can like retroactively send us those links and be counted for the points as well.
Awesome.
If somebody's
Yeah,
like, here's the points now.
they can be sent at any point during the year as long as it's before the end of the year. So if someone did 50 of them and didn't send any emails in until December, it's going to be a lot of work for us to put it all together then, but they can realistically do that.
We'll
So if
just
you've
say
done a race
don't
and you
do
haven't sent it in yet, you're still good to send
that.
it.
And it does is this strictly OCR? Do you would you if there's like a local hybrid event, are you counting those or only traditional
Just
OCR stuff?
OCR for this.
Okay,
Yep.
cool. Awesome. So if people do want to check out all the rules, are you listing the standings or anything like that publicly?
We have a leaderboard. Yeah, the
Yep.
leaderboard
Leaderboard.
is
Yep. The
available.
leaderboard's on the page. So where do they go to check all that stuff out?
Trio
Yeah,
Fitness
so
Training. Trio
it's
Fitness.
triofitnesstraining.com/OCR is greatest. Okay. Awesome. And
If
I'll
you
put a
go
link to
on
that as well.
triofitnesstraining.com, it's one of the tabs at the top of the page, so it's right there.
Awesome. Awesome. And do you guys have any other links, resources, or ways people can follow you guys to see what you're doing and what content you're putting out there?
Yep.
Yeah,
So we have
so
Instagram, Facebook, Trio
we
Fitness Training. I think we're the only Trio Fitness Training out there. So if you type that in, it should come up with us. Yeah, we have a blog on our page and we're at like 250 some articles over the years now. So there's tons and tons of articles for training tips, everything from like a Spartan sprint to an ultra to hybrid to trail racing, nutrition, hydration during races, pretty much anything you can think of in racing. We've done articles, very hard to come up with new topics at this point.
Absolutely.
So social media, the website, any of that.
Awesome. And actually, last thing. So out of all the races you guys done, specifically local ones, do you guys have a favorite race you've done yet?
I used to live in Virginia, and there was a race at a park right next to where I lived, and I used to run there all the time for training. And then I found out they had a race there and did that. I really liked it, partly because I knew the course so well. It's called the Mad Anthony Mud Run. It's not a hard race at all. It's more of a beginner one, but it was a great local race. And then more recently, sadly, it's not hosting any more events, but it was called Myrtle Beast, and it was in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And it was a really cool course with good obstacles and a cool setup, a little different setup than normal. Yeah, those two were awesome.
That's the exact one I was going to say, the Myrtle Beast, because it was structured in a way that no other OCR that I have done has been set up like that. It was kind of like a zigzag. You would have very straight running courses. The obstacles, there weren't, they did have one hill actually, but it wasn't like a terrain thing. It was just running back and forth kind of in a zigzag, and the obstacles were laid out in a way so that you could like really pick up speed on the straightaways, kind of try and hammer the obstacles, and you'd have to do a turnaround. But it was just a very unique way to do a 5K OCR, and their obstacles were really cool too. The people were nice. They talked to us before and afterwards. It was just kind of disappointing that they're not happening, but it was cool.
Awesome. So what event has machine guns?
That's
I want to
War
skip over
X.
that.
So
War X.
War X
Right.
in Ohio. So we, oh man, I so badly want to get out there. I've talked to the race director. I'm not sure if he's the owner also, but I've talked to him. I was like, I really want to get out there. It probably won't work out this year again, unfortunately. But yeah, they have flamethrowers. We had a client do their race last year and she loved it because they have a lot of unique obstacles. Yeah, they do machine gun fire in the background. And then one of their races, I think it's a 2 mile one, they have you shoot a rifle as a part of it. So yeah, it's a very unique, cool one. It's put on by a lot of veterans, so they just make it awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah, I figured I had to ask about that one. I hadn't heard machine guns in a race before. So very cool. I'm going to put links to everything so people can learn more about this. Super cool thing. Check out local races, learn new obstacles. Really cool that you guys are putting this on. So Joel, Luke, thank you so much for your insight and doing all this work and coming on the podcast today.
Yeah,
Thanks
thanks
for
for having
having
us,
us.
Mike.
All right, well, that's going to do it for episode 108 of the OCR Underground Show. Big thanks to my special guests today, Joel and Luke Hayes with Trio Fitness Training. I will put all the links to that Joel and Luke brought up about their training and their greatest OCR project, as well as all the other links mentioned in today's episode over at OCRunderground.com/episode-108. All right, well, that's it. I hope you guys got a lot out of this podcast. And until next time, keep training smarter.